This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, what is up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Good Morning Liberty. My name is Nate Thurston. Our co-host Charlie is not here today because he's never here, especially when we do interviews. But I am joined by Mr. David McGarry, who's a policy analyst at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance and a contributor for Young Voices. David, how you doing?
I am doing splendid. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a little bit now since you've been on the show. I hope everything's been going well for you. We haven't heard from you in a few months at least, so it's good. Good to hear from you.
I don't want to surprise you, but the federal government is doing lots of bad things that have been keeping me busy writing about. So
what, really?
Life is good on this.
I didn't think that was going to happen anymore. I thought that there was a law or a Supreme Court case that the government couldn't do bad things anymore. We were planning on shutting down. But I guess instead, let's talk about some of the bad things that they're doing. You've got a new piece out that I was reading up on earlier. It's called Industrial Policy Indignities. Of course, I thought it was pretty great because I'm not a big fan of protectionism and subsidies and tariffs and things like that. So why don't you give everyone the kind of brief summary of what this piece is about?
There is a new bipartisan and fairly odd intellectual coalition that favors robust industrial policy. This includes subsidies for manufacturing. This includes protective tariffs to keep all the bad, spooky foreign imports out of the country. Donald Trump has said that he wants to erect a 10% tariff barrier on all imports, because apparently we're just bringing back the very worst of the 1870s economic ideas. And something that they say in these corners of Twitter over and over again is that America doesn't make things anymore, and that is just as a matter of economics and as a matter of fact, that's simply false. If you go and you look at the data, American manufacturing is very productive. But it looks a little bit different in this country than, say, it looks in China. American workers, because of both the workers themselves and also the capital that they have access to, the technologies they have access to, are the most productive in the world. And so we are able to turn out more goods using less labor. And the case that I make in the piece that you referenced is that human capital is actually the most precious commodity that we have. And to enact an industrial policy that wastes human capital in some attempt to reconfigure the economy to look more like the 1950s or 1960s union paradise is incredibly foolish. And anybody who actually cares about the workers themselves and what is good for manufacturing communities and manufacturing employees should stay far away from anything that smells like it.
Well, let's talk about the tariffs thing first. I mean, what's wrong with making China pay a tariff?
Well, that's a very good question, but unfortunately, all of your economically familiar listeners can say it with me. Domestic consumers pay the cost of tariffs. If you if you raise the price on some Chinese import, the people who pay the cost of that tariff are going to be American consumers. This has been proved definitively over and over. And one instance I would point to is if you look at Trump's tariffs on China, what he did was he did great damage to the agricultural sector. And did he reverse his tariff schedules after seeing what he had wrought? No, he just went to the farm bill and subsidized farmers more to make up for the money that he had cost them.
Are we still doing that right now?
Oh yes, we are. and it's this. Speaking of this, the bipartisan nature of this coalition, Joe Biden has largely kept Donald Trump's tariffs. They have. Even both presidents have even gone so far as to remove the World Trade Organization's abilities to rein in American malfeasance. And this isn't an instance of some multinational governing body coming in and taking away America's national sovereignty. We have agreed to certain trade provisions with other countries to facilitate freer flows of goods. And then we have completely thrown them by the wayside. And then we went to the body that is in charge of enforcing all of this, and we basically neutered its ability to enforce or to hold us accountable for our own bad behavior.
But if we put tariffs on other countries and we'll just use China, and I know the tariffs are paid by consumers. I mean, doesn't that mean those things go up in price, and that means people will just decide to make those products in the United States, and therefore we'll have more jobs, and that is better for everyone. We won't actually have to pay those high tariff/taxes. We'll just make things here instead, and that'll be better for everyone in America. Isn't that how it goes?
In certain corners of Twitter, that is the story that they tell. No, so whenever you have a tariff good, American consumers, or excuse me, American manufacturers who jump in to make, say, I don't know, say it's some steel product, right? The American manufacturers that come in to fulfill that need, they're not selling at whatever low price that that the Chinese manufacturer was selling at. And you know this because had they been selling at that low price, consumers most likely would have been buying from the Americans because it would have eliminated a whole complicated network of shipping and whatnot. So protected industries, when the domestic producers start producing, they're still producing products at that higher price, and American consumers are still paying. And it's not just American consumers. It's also downstream manufacturers. So, for example, if you, I don't know, let's to stick with our 19th century theme, if you were to tariff raw wool, some of the people who you are harming the most are the American manufacturers of cloth products. Because now all of the material that they need to source to make, say, a shirt or to make jackets or whatever garment, all of those inputs are now sky high in price. And we've seen, and again, looking at the history of Trump's tariffs, we've seen the huge chaos that this wreaks in American manufacturing.
And so to fix that, to offset those costs, the government wants to come in and subsidize people who are experiencing higher prices for some of these goods. What's wrong with that?
Well, at this point, there is such a knock-on chain of inefficiency and corruption and misallocation of resources that we don't really have time to get through all of it. But time and time again, in protected industries, we see that when government softens competitive pressures on businesses, those businesses do not perform at their best. They do not work as efficiently and as sharply as they could. They don't innovate in the way that they could, because they know that the government is backing them up. This is part of the problem, honestly, in any regulated and subsidized industry. And again, the losers in all of this become the consumers and become any American business that relies on the protected industry.
One of the things I like that you talked about in the piece was human capital and wasted human capital. And then also you talked about worker dignity. People have mentioned that this would help bolster worker dignity, but of course you call it an indignity. And why is that?
There's a weird assumption that the ultimate pinnacle of worker dignity is some 1950s union worker who is in a steel mill making things like a man. And I'm sure you can insert whatever aesthetic adjectives you can think of into the conversation. But I would say that a worker whose job only exists because the government has essentially forced industry to be to work inefficiently, and a worker whose job only exists because the state has centrally planned it to be so, that's welfare. That is an undignified position for that worker to be in. And even if in the modern economy, the quote unquote modern manufacturing worker is someone who sits at a computer or sits at a desk, I don't think personally that takes away from the dignity, if the dignity of the worker, if that worker is doing the very best work that he can given his circumstances and his employer's circumstances, especially if that worker is being as productive as he can in providing the most value and the most benefits to those around him.
History, economics, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution. Did you study these things in school? Probably not. Or even if you did, maybe it's time for a refresher. I know it is for me. We went over these things, but ooh, that was a long time ago. Time and technology have changed a lot of things, but they have not changed basic fundamental truths about the world and our place in it. That's why I'm so excited that Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, the stories in the Book of Genesis, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, or the history of the ancient Christian church with Hillsdale College's online courses. All available for free. That's right, for free. I personally recommend you sign up for Constitution 101, the meaning and history of the U.S. Constitution. In this 12-lecture course, you'll explore the design and purpose of the Constitution, the challenges it faced during the Civil War, and how it has been undermined for more than a century by progressivism and liberalism. The course is self-paced, so you can start whenever and wherever. Enroll now in Constitution 101. We need more Americans who understand the Constitution can defend the freedom of the American people against encroachments of an increasingly large and unaccountable government. Go right now to hillsdale.edu/GML to enroll. There's no cost, and it's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/GML to register. hillsdale.edu/GML. Yeah, so I think one of the great things about your argument on the waste of human capital, kind of piggybacking off of that, is that people should be doing whatever the most productive thing is for them. And by subsidizing or putting tariffs or trying to control the manufacturing sector, you just don't get that peak efficiency that you would be getting. While someone is maybe working in a subsidized plant that wouldn't exist if it weren't for the subsidies, and they have that job, well, they could actually be working somewhere else where their labor was actually needed, creating a better use of our resources the whole time. And that seems like a better plan for me. But what a lot of people would go to, let's say for some reason there's still like a Trump supporter listening to us right now, they made it this far in, they couldn't find the skip button or whatever. So let's say that they're still listening right now. If we don't do these things for the manufacturing sector, won't all of these companies just move overseas and there won't be any jobs left in America? They'll just all be in China?
Well, no, because since we've seen farmers lose jobs to newfangled technologies like tractors and plows, and we've seen those who drive buggies go out of business because of these, you know, newfangled horseless carriages. Society and businesses and the economy at large find ways to repurpose people. Again, a lot of my argument goes back to my fundamental premise that people are a economically important and an economically valuable resource, that something about humanity, something in the nature of the person, it can provide incredible value and can create value and can make everyone wealthy, everyone wealthy in a community or in a country or even in the world now that we have international supply chains, or I should say now that we have more robust international supply chains. So a lot of my argument goes back to this view of people as inherently productive. And it's slightly odd that a lot of the pro-industrial policy advocates, especially on the right, who in other contexts sort of position themselves as the defenders of worker dignity or the defender of like a traditional more traditional concepts of like the nature of man and his relationship with work. It's odd to see those folks miss something so fundamental about how economics and human action actually function.
I actually thought of just asking you the first serious question that I've asked you the whole time, because if you can't tell, I've been being sarcastic and playing devil's advocate this whole time. But no, I was thinking about, okay, we go through the pandemic and we have all these problems with supply chains and we get a lot of things from other countries. This has been maybe one of the best arguments that I've heard, that it would actually be beneficial for people in the U.S. to for us to be buying things that are made here. So we're not worried about things getting shipped from overseas. We're not at risk of China cutting us off or anyone else cutting us off. What about that side of the argument? It sounds like a little bit, I don't know, closer to a real world argument, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, you say you're joking, but I'm gonna choose to interpret it as Good Morning Liberty's latent command and controlism coming out. The data simply show that more diversified supply chains are actually more robust because take the example of the baby formula shortage. So there's massive protectionism that basically makes us overly reliant on domestically produced baby formula. What happens when that domestically produced baby formula feels a supply shock? What happens when if something goes wrong at a factory? Well, we saw there's a massive shortage and it becomes a months-long national news story. And actually, how was that? I'd point out how that shortage was actually dealt with was that the federal government lowered barriers to importing foreign baby formula. Did anyone die? No. And it really just demonstrated how the protectionist argument, absent concerns such as national security, which add a different dynamic to this, but the basic protectionist argument that domestically sourced supply chains are more robust and safer is just completely disconnected from reality.
And so I guess a solution was going to be the last thing I was going to ask about this, which is, companies do move their manufacturing overseas a lot of times because it's too expensive to manufacture things here. Or maybe people are specialized, they do a better job in some of the locations they're going to. But what could we actually be pushing for that would organically grow our manufacturing sector if that's a thing we decided was necessary? What steps could we actually take to truly solve the problem other than taxing people and subsidizing other people?
Yeah, well, quickly, I just note that a lot of jobs from the Rust Belt haven't actually decamped to Mexico or China or whatnot. They've gone to southern states with friendlier regulatory climates and friendlier business environments. It's another weird thing. All of these industrial policy folks, they love unions. And they, at the same time, will tell you how terrible it is that nobody wants to operate a factory in Pennsylvania anymore, or that Detroit is cratering. It's like, well, look at the history. Maybe your support for unions is actually causing the things that you say is the downfall of, American culture and the American economy and most everything else. In terms of good reforms, the government can do many, many things to remove barriers to workers' ability to freely pursue their careers in whatever manner they see fit. Whether this is removing barriers to people moving between states, if it's reducing barriers just to people getting certified or licensed to work in various industries, getting rid of distortionary policies that tie people's health insurance to their employment. There's all sorts of ways, again, that the government, simply by removing itself from the equation, can really unburden individuals and empower them to use their productive capacity, their natural productive capacity, to the utmost, and really carve out wonderful and meaningful and fulfilling lives for themselves.
There you go, David, you pass. I tried to give you all the questions I thought you would get on Fox News or something like that. So, you did a great job with all of those hard-hitting questions, serious questions for sure. I truly, truly was wondering about all of those things. What are you working on, anything else that we need to know about right now? Guys, are you the same guy you were 10 years ago? Because I'm not. I woke up one day and realized I didn't have the same energy, the same lean muscle mass, or the get up and go in the bedroom I used to have. As we age, we lose testosterone. They call it the man hormone. I call it the spark from my nateness. But there is a solution: the powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T. I've only been taking this for a few weeks, but I can already tell you it's boosted my energy. I'm running around fixing stuff in the house, going on walks, and yes, I've even started working out. And by the way, my wife says this is none of your guys' business, but the Nate she met 14 years ago is back in the bedroom, if you know what I mean. Nugenix Total T testosterone booster with Testofen will help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life. Prove it to yourself risk-free. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There's nothing to lose and everything to gain. New energy, muscle, drive, and even more passion. Get your complimentary sample when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword GM. L. Nugenix Total T's Power Boost is backed by clinical studies and real science. Nugenix's key ingredients like Testofen has been shown to boost free testosterone levels in men. In other words, it's based in science and it works. Nugenix Total T's unprecedented formula with key ingredients that safely maximizes your free and total testosterone levels, helps you increase lean muscle mass, and skyrockets your performance as you age, whatever your age. If you're not totally satisfied, Nugenix will refund 100% of your purchase price plus shipping and processing. Now get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword GML. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you lose fat fast and get lean fast. Absolutely free. Text 231-231 and enter keyword GML. Text 231-231 and enter keyword GML. Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply. Number one, doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022.
I haven't written anything about it. I would just flag for everybody the oral arguments at the Supreme Court yesterday in the net choice cases. I'm sure you've talked about this at some point in the last few months, but the Supreme Court's essentially deciding whether or not social media platforms have a First Amendment right to exercise editorial discretion and to moderate what content goes on their sites. And if you look at the case law and if you look at the facts on the ground, I think the argument is pretty clearly yes. But there's a lot of folks out there who are making very disingenuous arguments that would do a lot of damage to free speech online. Both for platforms and also, to be frank, for users as well. I think there's a lot of unintended consequences that would occur if the Supreme Court rules the wrong way in this one. So I would just encourage everybody, including your one Trump supporter who's still sticking around, to check out those cases.
Do you have a second for me to ask you a couple things about that? Because I listened to all of the oral arguments today, and I found it pretty interesting, but I had a couple questions for you to see what you think. I haven't talked to anyone about this yet. How are they going to be able to...
My condolences, by the way.
What's up?
My condolences, by the way. I'm sitting through.
I found them pretty interesting, I guess, although I don't think any of them really made any compelling arguments that really resonated with me today. But I was going to ask how they keep Section 230 protections and also say that Facebook has editorial discretion. At the same, my worry here, because I don't think Facebook should be held liable for things that people say on their platform. I think that that would be terrible for free speech, actually. That would be a huge negative for all of us who say, terrible, divisive things on the internet all the time. And at the same time, I think they have the right to put or not put whoever they want on their platforms and decide who uses, even though we've been a victim of some of their censorship from time to time. Of course, I still think that it's their private property, it's their business, and they can do it as long as the government's not telling them to do it, which is a separate case. I think a lot of people are combining these two things.
Yes, sir.
This is a separate case, okay? They're going to decide whether or not the government was in the wrong in a later case. So these are separate things. So how do they keep 230 and say that Facebook is able to do this, just using Facebook as an example?
Yeah, so it's very simple. 230 doesn't say that the platforms have no speech interest or have no speech that is at play when they moderate. In fact, the whole point of 230 is the opposite. It's that there is, to some extent, some ownership isn't quite the right word, but there's some amount of possession that platforms have over the speech that they allow to be on their platforms, and therefore we're just removing liability. That's what 230 says, and specifically civil liability. So 230 does something very limited. It removes liability in a way that allows free speech to flourish online and allows platforms to operate, just to function and to exist. It was very disappointing to me to hear, especially some of the sharper Supreme Court justices, whom I usually have a lot of respect for, be completely unable to grasp this distinction.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it sounds like Thomas and Alito probably are going to be on the other side of this one. I mean, I think they're gonna be okay in this case. I think we're gonna have the outcome that you and I want in this case. I'm more concerned with the next case where they talk about what the government did and suggesting to these platforms who they should and shouldn't censor. But I would caution people on the right that are upset about Trump getting removed or about conservative talking points being removed or people being banned, that allowing the government to get this involved, especially calling them a common carrier. Think about all the regulations that the government has on any of the common carriers you can think of. Like, opening that door to calling them this is way too dangerous, in my opinion.
No, that I think that is the exact point of all this. It's odd watching all the Republican state officials who are very exercised over the Biden administration's informal efforts to shape what was said online, turn around and look at the NetChoice cases and say the government should also be involved in this other way in shaping what is and what isn't said online. It's a very weird contradiction, particularly because if the states, the Republican states, Florida and Texas, prevail in the NetChoice cases, one of two things happens. Either the internet becomes, or social media platforms choose to become free-for-alls. And as much as I am what has two thumbs and loves the First Amendment? What has two thumbs and loves for free speech and John Stuart Mill? This guy. However, I don't want to be on a website that is dominated by Nazis. I'm sorry. I don't want to spend my time there. And there are truly platforms that do not moderate content. And the worst, you know, they become wretched hives of scum and villainy and whatnot. So you do need some basic content moderation. So sort of like the true free speech absolutism is one possible outcome of a bad decision in these cases. And then the other outcome is that platforms just clamp down very heavily on entire subject groups. And they say, okay, so if we can't discriminate based off of viewpoint, we just won't let anyone talk about the topic. And suddenly you have an internet that is functionally far less free than it was beforehand. And then I'm sure the Republicans would start, or at least hopefully they would start rethinking all of the conclusions and rethink what they had wrought.
It sounds more like turning Facebook into an HR chat room or something like that. That doesn't sound very good to me. And also, one last point I'll say on this is that when these laws were passed, Elon Musk had not yet bought Twitter, and that has happened since then. In my opinion, that is a great example of the free market working, or the market working. Someone coming in and saying, well, we need to have a freer place for people's ideas. And so someone came in and spent a ton of money, and now there is a website that millions of people are using that we can all go and say almost anything that we want, that wasn't there at the time the laws were actually passed. And it didn't take the laws for this to happen. It actually took someone in the market coming in and changing things up. And I think that's a much better direction for us to go. But David, I'm going to let you go. Where can people go to follow you and see more of your stuff?
I am in many places, but I will just point people to X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and you can find me at David B. McGarry.
All right. When you give people the website, do you still say twitter.com/ or whatever, or is there an x.com/ thing? I don't know which one this is.
I still say Twitter, but that's just a little bit of my cantankerous get off my lawn old manism coming out. Where, yeah. I wrote recently, to paraphrase Billy Joel, it may be X now, but it will always be Twitter to me.
Yeah, I agree. That's the worst thing Musk ever did. Don't ever change the name of something that's become a verb. It's not a good idea. So anyway, all right, David, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back on again soon.
Thanks, my friend. Looking forward to it.